Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I chat about my fabulous experience at the fashion show last weekend, True South. I chat with Lauren Guerreri about the Fat Library Project, and I spotlight a piece written by the amazing Kath Reed and published on Hoopla about You Don't Know Me. I had the immense pleasure of attending True South, a polyfabulous fashion show held at the Mongeray Art Center in South Auckland last weekend. True South was the opening event for the 2012 South Auckland Art Summit, and I was lucky enough to be invited up to attend as a VIP. Organized by the impressive Emma Tavola, True South was an amazing blend of fashion, music, performance, and song. The focus of the event was the fashion. Five collections for fat women took the stage. The designer showing collections were Melissa Cole, Rachel Duvall, Tasha Lee, Paula Chan, and Sarzina Wilson. I enjoyed clothes from all of the collections and was especially drawn to the line by Melissa Cole, as her work seemed designed most with bodies like mine, 26 plus, in mind. The event received some good press, although many of the comments devolved quickly into the obesity epidemic hand-wringing over promoting a, quote, unhealthy lifestyle. Because everyone knows, you can tell everything about a person's lifestyle by looking at the size of their body. And of course, anytime you choose not to vilify something, you must be promoting it as the goal for all. I know, you should never read the comments. It was a fun event, and it promoted the beauty and style of the South Pacific women of South Auckland. Fat bodies are rarely presented in the mainstream media. We're not on television shows, in movies, or on runways. When we are in pop culture, we're usually comic relief or portrayed as caricatures. The most prolific representation of fat bodies in the mainstream eye are accompanying news stories about the obesity epidemic, and these are usually bodies without heads, aka the headless fatty. This only serves to reinforce to people of all sizes the negative stereotypes associated with fatness in fat people. This fashion show provided an opportunity for fat people, and especially fat women and girls, to be able to look and think, wow, my body, her body looks like my body. I can see myself in her. Even more importantly, it provided an opportunity for fat women of color to recognize themselves in a positive representation of delightful fashion. Truly groundbreaking. At the close of the show, Bella Kalulu and Rosita Vai performed a great version of I'm Every Woman and encouraged the crowd to clap along with the song. I found myself bouncing up and down on my seat, wanting desperately to jump on the catwalk and dance along to the music. As a fat woman, it's rare to recognize myself in someone put forth by society as a celebrity, as special, as desirable. At True South, I watched in delight as fat women sang, fat women danced, and fat women strutted down the catwalk. It was one of the best experiences I have had since I moved to New Zealand. I am so grateful to Emma and all of the South Auckland Pacific Arts Summit 2012 for putting this together and allowing me to come along. Joining me today is Dr. Lauren Guerreri, a postdoc in marketing at Griffith University in Brisbane, Australia. Lauren, thank you so much for joining us on Friend of Maryland.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I'm super excited to have you on to talk about the work that you're doing in your postdoc, which I believe is called the Fat Library Project.
Yes, we're still coming up with an exact name, but that pretty much hits the head exactly what we're doing at the moment.
Okay, so what exactly is the work that you're doing?
Okay, well, I guess we're really picking up the point that, you know, most fat study scholars have examined time and time again about the social discrimination that fat people always face and how this seems to be an acceptable form of bias within the wider community. And what we're particularly focusing on is one the causes of weight-based stigma coming from images that we're encountering in the media.
So it's Charlotte Cooper is the one who termed the phrase headless fatty. Yes. And, you know, she, you know, used that to refer to the fact that quite often when you see a fat body in represented in the media, whether it be print or online or on the television, quite often the picture that you see is a fat person from the neck down. So you kind of just see their bulging abdomen, if you will. And of course, what Charlotte, you know, talked about in terms of the danger of the headless fatty is it's a form of objectification, which is seeing a person for less than a whole person. And when you do that, it's easier to think of them as less of a whole person and therefore easier to, you know, project negative things on them and think badly and shame and all those kinds of things. Because if they're not really real, if they're not really a person, then why does it matter?
Exactly. And I think those types of images just go to reinforce that stigma and prejudice. So there was quite an alarming statistic that 72% of images that accompanied news stories about obesity in the media actually portrayed fat people in such a negative light. 72% is an overwhelmingly negative number. So I think action really needs to be taken in this regard. And that's where we came in with this project. That was sort of our cause to reason I've stumbled there.
No, that's okay. So you guys are trying to come up with a library of images of positive representations of fat bodies?
That's exactly it. So I guess we were just really concerned that, you know, this evidence that all this discrimination was out there was hardening these body image issues. It was linked to disordered eating patterns, low levels of self-esteem, depression. You know, there were real consequences coming out of these negative representations. So what our project involves, it's myself and another academic from Griffith University, Isaac Brown, who's a part of the photography department. And what we have done is a 12-month documentary-style study of the lived experience of fat. And we've focused on the experiences of six Australian fat activists, mainly women, five women, but one male as well. So what the outcome we're trying to get from that is more positive and more representative images, I guess, of fat that are really going to disrupt those stereotyped images of fat that you see in the media.
When I've recently been involved with an episode of 2020 here in New Zealand, and
yes.
I spoke quite at length across the days of filming and the months prior to filming and the months since filming with the team from 2020 about what I think is the media's responsibility in not reinforcing negative stereotypes of fat people. And a big part of that is, you know, yeah, this headless fatty phenomenon. And one of the things that they've, you know, kind of came back to me with was, well, you know, if we're doing a story about, you know, the bad things about fat or the obesity epidemic, it would probably be really difficult for us to find like a fat person who's willing to actually, you know, they think they're actually being sensitive by not showing the face of this fat person who's accompanying this news story, which might be true. And I think part of what I challenged them with was, well, if, you know, all of the stories that you're doing about a particular part of the population are negative stories to the extent that you think it's sensitive to not actually show a person of that population, isn't that a larger problem in and of itself?
And what was their response to that out of interest?
I think they agreed that it was, but I think it was kind of, you know, well, what other kind of story, you know, would we do? Or, you know, we're now doing this story on you, so that's a step in the right direction. Are you hoping that by compiling a library of positive representations of fat bodies, that you guys might actually kind of encourage the media to do more positive kinds of stories?
I think that that's a definite aim, but I think there's also a broader community aim as well, that we just want more people to feel that they can really live their life to the fullest. The stories that I've heard from the activists who've obviously gone a huge mode of transformation, but hearing their early stories of when they felt that they had to hide or shame, when they were really felt at the height of their stigmatization, it's really alarming. And to think that there's a lot of other people out there in the community that might also be thinking or feeling the same way, I want these images to really empower people to focus on having an improved body image. So, for instance, one of the activists who I spoke to said how when she wanted to participate in some sort of exercise, she used to go out for runs at 3 o'clock in the morning or walks for 3 o'clock in the morning because she would get hollered at by cars if she did it in the afternoon, or, you know, people would wind down their windows and say offensive things to her. So she felt the only safe place was for her to go out at 3 o'clock in the morning and do that. Now, that's alarming for a young woman to be going out that late at night anyway by herself in the streets, no matter where you are, and doing something like that. So I'd hate to think that there's other people who might be in that similar situation. So perhaps by seeing some of these images, there's an element of, you know, if she can do that, so can I. So you're getting that sort of positive representation that people don't feel that they need to hide away, that they don't feel that they need to be shamed. And I think that would really tap into, you know, the proponents of the health at every size philosophy as well.
So in the work that you're doing, you said that you've been following six fat activists around for about a year now. Yes. Is the end product, is it going to be like a documentary movie that you're going to put out, or is it just going to be like a library of still images?
Sure. So there's two outputs that we're hoping for. One's going to be an image library that's going to be released in June, and that is of still images only. And that's what we'll be putting to the media and hoping that they'll take up in response to stories that they'd be running. Now, there'll be very strict conditions under which the images can be used, and we're hoping that those conditions might also govern the direction of the stories,
right,
as you alluded to before as well. We already know that one website, an online website called The Conversation in Australia, which I know you've written for as well, has said that they're very interested in using these images, you know, in stories ongoing from here, and they were aware of this issue to begin with. So they were sort of screaming out for a solution, but to find the solution of representative images was just so hard, so you'd fall back on what's easy. So we want to stop that falling back on what's easy. The second output that we're going to have is an art exhibition of the images, and that's likely to be in around October in Brisbane at an art factory called The Powerhouse, which is a very prominent art exhibition space in Brisbane, and we're hoping that that's another way that the public can sort of engage with the project as well.
I know, it makes me want to buy a ticket to Brisbane for October.
Definitely.
Are you hoping, is in terms of, obviously, these images you're releasing, like when you say the media, I'm assuming you mean like Australia media. Are you hoping to also actually like target and make these kinds of images available to medias outside of Australia as well?
Absolutely. We don't have any problem with doing that. And we're all sort of, the details are just being worked out at the moment. Obviously, you know, in conjunction with the activists who participated in their project, because they have just as much ownership over the images and the direction of the images as well. So it's a very collaborative project, and I probably haven't reinforced that at the start. So it's, you know, academics and the fat activist community coming together and trying to create a project that's really going to make change within the community. I think too often academics can be a little isolated in their own ivory towers, and, you know, to really be participating with activists in this way is fulfilling for me, but I think it will create real change, and that's what we're hoping to. So in terms of an international audience, I wouldn't see why not. I think the more powerful the images can have, you know, around the world, then that would be a wonderful thing.
Would you be hoping to grow the images available larger than just the six activists that you've been using now, in terms of people from all over the world and different kinds of backgrounds?
Definitely. And that's something that we'll be working out as the library sort of closes from our end, how we could potentially get people to contribute images and make this an ongoing sort of, you know, live project, I guess, from around the world, where perhaps, you know, other academics might want to work with activists, or other creative people around the world might want to put an input into the project. So we don't see it as something that we have ownership of. It's definitely something which, you know, we want to release into the community and sort of be an ongoing, growing thing, I guess.
Well, that just sounds amazing. And I'm looking forward to seeing kind of what comes next and yeah, like how this grows. And as you said, I mean, really kind of changes the world.
I hope so. Thank you.
Well, listen, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing sharing information about the Fat Library Project, as it's currently titled. I'm sure we will all look forward to seeing what happens with it next.
Thanks so much.
In the spotlight today is a piece from The Hoopla entitled You Don't Know Me and written by Kath Reed of Fat Heffalump. It was published on March 22, 2012. Quote, "You've probably seen me on the news on more than one occasion, but you may not recognize me if you see me on the street. You probably don't even notice that I'm there, or if you do, it's to sneer at how disgusting I am, to scoff at how greedy and lazy I am, to declare that I am driving up healthcare costs, or costing taxpayers money. But you don't know anything about me. You've just seen me there on the news or in a magazine article. You see, when I'm represented in the media, it is usually with my head cut off. Unflattering footage of me seated, walking, or eating. All things everyday people do, but are deemed unattractive in fat people. And the media is usually talking about curing me, preventing me, eradicating me. Rarely am I seen, represented as a full part person, with my head visible, my face identifiable, and with any information about me other than my fatness. You don't see me in the context of my career, my friends, my life. You don't see me as a contributing member to society who works hard, pays her taxes, pays her own way in life. Nobody sees me as I actually am, intelligent, compassionate, dedicated, funny, productive, joyful, active, fashionable, loved. The impact of that is a culture that treats fat people, and especially fat people with illness or disability, as subhuman. In recent times, I have been sent death threats on my blog because I talked about being a fat woman with diabetes. I have been photographed on the street or other public places by complete strangers, at least four times that I know of. Had a well-dressed woman of about 45 call me a fat cunt as she walked past me on a train platform. Been spat at by a man passing me on the street and had rubbish thrown at me from a car. These things don't happen because there are lots of bad, horrible people in my city. These things happen because every day people are told over and over and over that people like me are an obesity epidemic that must be cured for the good of the human race. Because it is bred in our society that fat is the worst thing you can possibly be, so therefore it's okay to behave horribly to fat people. Because you're not healthy has become the equivalent to you are a worthless person. Thing is, we fat people see ourselves on the evening news. We recognize ourselves even with our heads removed. I cannot tell you what it is like to be watching the evening news and to see your own body, head removed, in a story that is calling for your eradication. I cannot tell you how devastating that is. I can tell you that later that year, after my first time I saw my own body on the evening news, I tried to take my own life. I felt so worthless because no matter what I did, I could not make myself thin. And because everywhere I turned, someone was saying that I should be eradicated. I was not a person. I was part of the obesity epidemic. We need to stop vilifying and dehumanizing fat people. We need to stop making people's bodies a public health issue. It's a private matter, and as individual to each human being as their fingerprint or their blood type, that should be between that person and their healthcare providers. We need to allow all people and all bodies to live their lives to the fullest without fear of abuse or shaming. After all, you cannot shame someone thin, nor can you shame someone healthy. End quote. Closing the show is Root Boy Slim with Live For Tonight.
You got to live, live. You got to live. You got to live. Tom Horman.